And welcome back to A World Gone Mad, Season 1, Episode 13. Ooh, Episode 13, spooky. Nah, it's not Halloween. I'm your host, Jeff Allen Wolf, for another edition. Before I start, I want to correct something I talked about last week. And I was talking about Israel and Iran, and I inadvertently made a faux pas, a mistake, a boo-boo. I should have known better. And I was recording during the time when the rockets were being fired or missiles were being fired from Iran into Israel. And I stated that Israel was in NATO and the NATO countries would have to automatically defend Israel in a case of an aggression such as the one from Iran. Well, obviously, Israel is not in NATO. What I meant to say, during the Israeli offensive in Gaza, Israel, for the most part, has been able to count on the support of the members of NATO. And they're not a formal member. Like I just said, Israel has fostered a close bond with many members, especially the U.S., as a critical ally in one of the world's most turbulent regions. So I wanted to get that on the record. Israel is not in NATO. My bad. Now, after Iran fired the missiles and the drones, etc., into Israel, everyone was waiting for Israel's retaliatory strike, if there was going to be one. We know what happened, but I want to recap something. They did a poll, and a survey by Hebrew University in Jerusalem has found that 74% of those polled would oppose a retaliatory strike against Iran if it undermined Israel's security alliance with its allies. So basically, the survey was conducted last week, April 14th to 15th, by internet and telephone, and sampled 1,466 men and women representing adult Israelis, both Jews and Arabs. The margin of error was given as 4.2% points. Now, 56% of the respondents believe Israel should respond positively to political and military demands from its allies. Also, 32% were undecided, 12% disagreed. So basically, that's what the poll had stated. So we now have learned that Israel did fire back at Iran, and we don't have a detailed understanding. I know there's reports out there you'll read and says, we know exactly what they did. We really don't know what they did other than a targeted attack in response to Iran firing into Israel from their soil. But here's the interesting thing. Iran said in one source, they have no evidence of a missile attack. So, what does this mean? Well, as we stand today, it is a Saturday, approximately noon, as I'm recording this. When you get this podcast Tuesday morning, some things may have changed, but right now, Iran basically saying, yeah, you know, nothing happened, so no response needed. Are we winding down? Are we de-escalating? It certainly sounds like it. A lot of the analysts in the Middle East think, after Iran fired and Israel targeted, Iran responding back saying, nope, nothing really to see here, that's it. If that's the case, then the people of Israel and Iran and people in that region can breathe easier, and we, the world, can take a collective sigh of relief as we stand now. So let's see in 24 to 48 hours if anything changes. So what do you think? You, the listeners, the Wolfpack listeners of this show, do you think we're done for the moment? I'm not talking about future, but do you think we're done? That was it? And it's contained, or something's coming? Because remember, Iran said they would attack immediately back. They haven't. We'll see what happens. In other related news, U.S. vetoes Palestinian attempt to gain statehood at the United Nations. 12 members of the Security Council had voted in favor of the resolution to make Palestine a state, while two countries, the U.K. and Switzerland, abstained, and the U.S. vetoed it. Now, the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas sharply criticized the U.S. veto, saying in a statement that it was unfair, immoral, unjustified, and defies the will of the international community, which strongly supports the state of Palestine attaining full membership in the United Nations. Now, Israel Foreign Minister Israel Katz praised the U.S. for vetoing what he called a shameful proposal. The proposal to recognize a Palestinian state more than 6 months after the largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust, and after the sexual crimes and other atrocities committed by Hamas terrorists, was a reward for terrorism. So where do you stand? I don't know. I think a two-state solution is important, but I don't know. The jury is still out for me. I'm not sure I have privy to all the details, and I don't think I ever will, but what do you, the listenership, feel? Should there be a two-state? Should there be only one? Let me know. We're going to give you a feedback information on how to reach us, but where do you stand? We also had the Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas impeachment trial in the House that was sent to the Senate because he had high crimes and misdemeanors, and he was despicable, you know, just like Donald Trump. It reached that level, and he needed to be impeached, and he was impeached in the House. Well, the Senate voted to kill the second and final article. They already killed the first article of impeachment against Homeland Security Mayorkas. The Senate voted along party lines, 51-49, and the chamber voted also to dismiss the trial completely. So it's done. Hey guys, the ones who are listening out there, I know you probably think the same thing. Mayorkas was not ever at the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. This was a joke. This was overreach by the House because they've got nothing better to do than raise stuff under a stone and dig for worms and bugs just to get in the public eye to go, look, look what we're doing, those corrupt Democrats. Look what how bad they are. Mayorkas is one enough. We know he did not reach that level for impeachment. So I'm glad the Senate killed that. It's done. What do you got next, Republicans? I'm sure you're going to come up with something. What do they got next? Well, while that's going on, you know RNC is now under Lara Trump. Seriously? Lara Trump runs the RNC. And the Republican National Committee, last I'm laughing, I am sorry. I try not to laugh when I do this, but when you hear this, I'm sure when you read this, you did the same thing. The Republican National Committee last week sent out a scripted call to voters' phones on behalf of new co-chair Lara Trump, saying Democrats committed massive fraud in the 2020 election. It's the latest example how the RNC, under the former president's daughter-in-law, is perpetuating lies about the 2020 election. Even as prominent Republicans say the party needs to look forward to win in 2024, holy moly shamoly, right? Where do they draw the line? I don't mind having a conversation with a Republican, but stop with this idiotic tinfoil hat view of the world and just coming up with stuff that you cannot back up without evidence. I don't even know where to begin, and I could do a four-hour show on this, but enough. And RNC and Lara Trump, that's a match made in heaven, right? All right, going from the ridiculous with Lara Trump to even the worst and more ridiculous story, the Republican-controlled Arizona House of Representatives, that's where I live, Arizona, once again failed to advance a repeal of the abortion ban law that they were using. And if you remember, it was a 160-year-old abortion rule. 160 years old is the rule that they're going by about abortion. Wednesday it happened, days after the state Supreme Court rolled state politics by reviving the law. Now, the vote is a blow for GOP candidates in competitive races who have been scrambling to distance themselves from the court's decision. Republicans facing competitive races in the state, including former President Donald Trump and U.S. Senate candidate, Carrie Lake, called on the GOP-controlled legislature to work with Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs to take a more moderate path. And that's surprising. Carrie Lake calling on Democrat Governor Katie Hobbs. So a 160-year-old abortion ban rule was still upheld and shot down to repeal it. Oh my, they're drinking heavily on the Republican side. Before I take a short break, I got two quick stories here. And this is concerning to me on this story. The Supreme Court's conservative majority on the Supreme Court, appeared skeptical of a charge federal prosecutors have lodged against hundreds of people who attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. While the court's three-justice liberal wing support the charge, the conservative majority raised a series of skeptical questions about its potential scope and whether it would criminalize other conduct. Now, a decision against the government could reopen some 350 cases in which defendants have been charged with obstructing an official proceeding by pushing their way into the Capitol in 2021. The charge can tack up to 20 years onto a prison sentence. Joseph Fisher, a former Pennsylvania police officer and January 6th defendant who brought the case to the Supreme Court, argued that the law at issue, created in a response to the Enron scandal in 2001, was intended to stop witness tampering, not riots. During more than an hour and a half of arguments, Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, and Samuel Alito were among those who appeared to take issue with the government's reading of the law. So here we go, another Supreme Court ruling coming that's going to make it softer on the January 6th rioters. They're in bed with the Republicans, and they're going by political affiliation, not by law and about what's morally and legally right. Shame on you. And just when you thought Jeff could go one episode without mentioning Donald, sorry, I do apologize. It was almost, but I got to bring this up. The hush money trial that's starting Monday, that's been going on the previous week to seat the jurors, and you're going to hear this episode one day after. Trump this past week was asked whether he thinks the jurors seated in today's trial, or this week's trial rather, can be fair. Former President Donald Trump said he would decide, ready, after the trial, if he thought the seven jurors who were seated in his New York criminal hush money case could be fair. Trump was asked on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, by a reporter, what kind of juror in your mind is an ideal juror to do and take this trial, to be involved in this trial? Anybody that's fair, Donald said. Trump was asked again, do you think they can be fair? He says, again, I'll let you know after the trial. What do you think, Jeff? You were arrested and brought before the judge and you were sentenced. What do you think? Were they fair? Well, no, I was sentenced, so therefore they weren't. They sucked. I was let off. Great, jury. Anyways, by the way, separate comment. Doesn't Donald Trump look old? Everyone was saying how Biden looks old, and in some cases he does, but his State of the Union address was brilliant. Donald looks old. He's starting to get that, what they're accusing Joe Biden of. And I think all of this stuff with the trials and the campaign and everything else is taking its toll. I'm going to take a short break. When I get back, no rant or yelling or screaming, but I'm going to talk about the Ukraine aid and the Israel aid that's been happening in the last couple of weeks to get to the point we are right now. I also want to remind you, I started a Facebook group a little over 7 days ago. We're almost at 100 members, which is pretty good in a short period of time. And the Facebook group is for this podcast, for the Wolfpack listeners of this podcast. Go to Facebook and search A World Gone Mad Podcast. A World Gone Mad Podcast. Join like-minded people like yourself who are not in love with Donald, not in love with the MAGA supporters, and want to preserve our democracy in this country. A World Gone Mad Podcast on Facebook. I'll see you there, and I'll see you when I get back. You're listening to A World Gone Mad. Just wanted to let you know you can reach me with our toll-free number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that number is 833-399-9653, 833-399-9653. Leave your name, your age, your location, where you're listening from. Don't forget to subscribe. Hit subscribe on whatever app you're on. And also rate the show and give a review. Thank you so much. Now back to the show. And welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Allen Wolf, and I want to talk about my commentary on Ukraine. And it seems that we neglected what was happening in Ukraine because there was a lot of battles going on in the House. The Republicans, we can't give any more aid to Ukraine. Screw them. Let them fall off the face of the earth. And I personally have stated in multiple episodes, Ukraine is important to stop Putin from taking over that country completely and then going, you know what, the hell with it, let's go get another country. And this time in NATO, which now grows into a bigger episode, a bigger conflagration across the world. All right, here's something interesting. You know why Ukraine is so important and why Putin is so dangerous? Former Vice President Mike Pence this past week warned that if Russian President Vladimir Putin were to overrun Ukraine, he would then attack a NATO nation, forcing the U.S. to become directly involved. This is a quote from him. I have no doubt in my mind, having met Vladimir Putin, that if Putin were allowed to overrun Ukraine, it would not be long before he crossed the border of a NATO country where our men and women in uniform would be required to fight. And that was an interview with Jake Tapper on CNN. So this is important. And the House was playing games for a while until recently. So whatever you think of Mike Johnson, current, very loosely, Speaker of the House, he decided to put forth a bill in the House to give aid to Ukraine and Israel and other issues for aid package. And he was then threatened by Marjorie Taylor. I make up stuff as I go along, and I'm a disruptor of the world because I have no clue of what I'm doing. Green. Long title. The business card is ridiculously long. So we'll just shorten it to Marjorie Taylor Loonball. Sorry. That's how I feel about her. So she threatened to force an ouster of the current Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, just like they did before with Kevin McCarthy. Well, Mike Johnson said, and being defiant, facing growing threats about his leadership, he's not resigning, and dismissed threats to his gavel as absurd after a second member from Congress threatened to join Marjorie Taylor Nutball, Loonball, Thomas Massey, and then a third member, Paul Gosar. Paul Gosar is a real interesting story. Look up Paul Gosar, and if you know about him, he's really a character, just like Marjorie Taylor Loonball. So, adding to the intrigue of the House and the speakership, because this was happening, basically he was being lobbied, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, was being lobbied by his members to raise the threshold required to trigger the procedure to oust a Speaker of the House. It was, if you remember before, a single member can force a floor vote on the motion to vacate the speakership. That was part of a deal that Kevin McCarthy had to make to become Speaker last year. Well, he's being lobbied, and he is considering making the change to the process to change it from one vote where it'd be a higher threshold. He was considering that. And just this past week, Speaker Mike Johnson announced he will not change the procedure for removing him from the speakership based on one vote, after hardliners reacted with fury to the proposed change in the House rules and, of course, the Ukraine passage of aid. Quote from Mr. Johnson, since the beginning of the 118th Congress, the House rules allowing a motion to vacate from a single member has harmed this office and our House majority. Recently, many members have encouraged me to endorse a new rule to raise the threshold. While I understand the importance of that idea, any rule change requires a majority of the full House, which we do not have. We will continue to govern under the existing rules. In other words, one person, Marjorie Taylor Loonball, can put a motion to vacate the speakership that Mike Johnson has currently. So whether you like Mike Johnson or not, I personally don't, he went ahead last week and pushed through a huge package for aid to Ukraine, Israel, and other countries and other parts of the bill, which I'll go into in a second. In order to pass that bill, because of the hardliners in Congress, he would need the help from the Democrats. Well, breaking news, you'll get it after the fact, of course, but as I'm recording it today, on Saturday, the Democrats jumped in and helped Mike Johnson pass a bipartisanship bill And the bill basically is a three-part supplemental package, looks strikingly similar to the Senate's bill in several key areas. The bills taken together will add up to about $95 billion in aid, the same amount of the Senate bill. And basically what's going to happen is $61 billion will go to Ukraine military aid and regional partners. $23 billion will go to replenishing the U.S. stockpiles, and $26 billion to Israel, $8 billion to the Indo-Pacific regions, according to the House Appropriations Committee. This is going to go ahead to the Senate to be passed. Part of the bill also includes sanctions on Iran and maybe a measure that would include a TikTok ban. So kudos to pushing that through. As you know what I said, Ukraine, to support them, is incredibly important, and humanitarian aid to Israel. What do you think? Are you pleased? Finally, some relief is coming to Ukraine, which has been on hold for a month, a little over a month, where Putin was doing whatever the hell he wanted in Ukraine. Let me know. We have a Facebook group. That Facebook group is A World Gone Mad Podcast on Facebook. A World Gone Mad Podcast. Join us, all the listeners from this podcast together, fellow people like yourself who want to preserve democracy. Looking forward to seeing you there. I'm going to take a short break. And when I come back, we're going to talk about immortality. It's closer than we think. Would you like to be immortal? Hang around. You're listening to A World Gone Mad. Thank you. And you could reach me by sending me an email. And the email is aworldgonemadpodcast@gmail.com. Leave your first name in the email, your age, your location, where you're, you know, listening to us from, what app, etc. And any comments you have. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe. That way, I can let you know when the new episode goes online. It's automatic, and it's free. Also, if you can review, rate, rank the show on the app you're listening from, that helps me tremendously. I thank you for listening, whether you just joined us for the first time or have been listening for a while. I appreciate that. And now, back to the show. And everyone, welcome back to A World Gone Mad Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Allen Wolf. Before the break, I was talking about the word immortality, meaning to basically live forever. Why do we die? Well, the latest on aging and immortality is from a Nobel Prize-winning scientist that attempts to explain this. Since time immemorial, humans have done their darndest to try and cheat death, okay? Today, as revolutionary advancements transform the stuff of science fiction into everyday reality, are we closer to extending our lifespan or even perhaps reaching immortality? The new book by Venki Ramakrishnan, Why We Die, looks at cutting-edge efforts to extend lifespans and the ethical costs of those attempts. Now, if so, do we really want eternal life? Now, in his new book, Why We Die, The New Science of Aging and the Quest for Immortality, Nobel Prize-winning molecular biologist sifts through past and cutting-edge research to uncover the aspirational theories and practical limitations of longevity. Along the way, he raises critical questions about the societal, political, and ethical costs of attempts to live forever. Now, we know that humans lived twice as long as we did 150 years ago due to increased knowledge about diseases and their spread. Does this suggest interventions to triple or quadruple our lifespan lie just around the corner? The biologist who wrote the book, Venki, shares his perspectives and the realities of aging, death, and immortality. So a couple of things here. Check out the book, number one. Also, if you're 50 and older, even if you're younger, I want to point you to a podcast that's really cool. And it's called Bill Monty's Guide for Getting Older. Bill Monty, M-O-N-T-Y-S, Guide for Getting Older. And he talks about not being old, but getting older. Friend of mine, great podcast. His new episode dropped called The Invisible Generation. Check it out. So the question I have for the listeners, would you choose immortality if you could? Think about this. You'd be surprised. I had some answers from people that didn't want to live longer than their natural lifespan. But would you, each individual listener, choose immortality if you could? Do you want to live longer than your lifespan? The issue, of course, the negative issue, besides the political, religious, moral, ethical underpinnings of this, is our loved ones would die along the way if they didn't choose the same path we did. I personally would like to extend my life. I'm being honest. There's a lot of things I still want to do. Now, if it includes a healthy extension, not if I'm going to be 100, 110, I'm going to be in a chair somewhere in a bed and I can't do anything. But if I am coherent, cognizant enough to enjoy life, yes. We have 6,000 books in my library upstairs on the second floor library. I have tons of CDs that I want to listen to, old vinyl music that I want to listen to. I have games for the PlayStation and Xbox. Yes, I'm a gamer. So there's a lot of things I would still like to do, attempt, and see. So I'm going to leave you, the listening audience, the Wolfpack listening audience. Do you want to live longer? Would you choose immortality if you could? And you could reach me the several ways you already heard, phone number, email. Don't forget our Facebook group, A World Gone Mad Podcast on Facebook. A World Gone Mad Podcast on Facebook. Join us and the ever-growing listeners like yourself who are supporting it and growing it as we speak. Thank you for listening. I'll be back with another episode next week of A World Gone Mad. I'm Jeff Allen Wolf, your host. And as I say each week, stay hopeful.